Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. Our show is about to begin.
Throughout the Philosopher's Stone, Harry Potter comes to realize that he truly belongs in this wondrous wizarding world of magic. This point is driven home, in no small part, by the music. This is The Soundtrack Show. Welcome back to The Soundtrack Show. I'm your host, David W. Collins, and this episode is part two of our look and listen to the music of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. A movie from 2001 based on a book by J.K. Rowling, directed by Chris Columbus, with a musical score by John Williams. In the last episode, we took a close look at Hedwig's theme and began to touch on a cue called Harry's Wondrous World. We also started to discuss a theme for Harry Potter and his parents, and we're going to continue that discussion in this episode. But first, I want to chat about the sequencing and setup of the Harry Potter books and films. In my mind, these stories resonate so strongly with us because they are a magical metaphor for adolescent struggles. Set against the backdrop of a typical school year, from late August, September, through the holiday season, winter, and spring, and finishing in late spring or early summer. For the most part, each book and film follows this pattern, with the next story picking up at the end of summer. This is a pattern that's really familiar to us. We've all experienced it as well. The nervousness around starting with a new class, a new group of students, new professors, the changing of season, and the spookiness of Halloween, the big autumn homecoming game, the holiday break with everyone going their separate ways as the school shuts down, and of course the push towards studying for finals at the end of the year. The story of Harry Potter really leverages these moments, especially in the first several books and films, and musically it creates a lot of wonderful opportunities for the composer. Let's start with the beginning of the school year, as it truly is our portal into a magical world. After arriving via the Hogwarts Express, the students travel by boat to their new home, and we see Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry in all of its nighttime glory. We start with Hedwig's theme, stated just like it was over the main title of the film. But then a new, wonderful piece of music emerges. And reflects the excitement that the students feel about coming to Hogwarts. Slightly majestic, slightly twisted, and full of the unexpected, kind of like Hogwarts itself. But then, as they arrive inside Hogwarts and are greeted by Professor McGonagall at the top of the stairs, listen to how this viola, or maybe a cello played high on the neck, gives us this nervous uncertainty of the students, as they're told that they're about to be split up into four houses: Gryffindor, Hufflepuff, Ravenclaw, or Slytherin. And as we move into the main hall, we're given more of that wonder and magic of the Hogwarts music. Again, going back and forth between excitement and wonder, and pure nerves, which we're about to get again when the sorting ceremony begins, just like we all did on our first day of school.
We're ready for you now. Follow me.
It's just bewitched to look like the night sky. I read about it in Hogwarts, a history.
All right, will you wait along here, please?
So, we begin with Hermione.
No. When I call your name, you will come forth. I shall place the sorting hat on your head, and you will be sorted into your houses. Hermione Granger?
First nerves.
Oh, no. Okay, relax.
Mental, that one. I'm telling you.
Ah, right there.
And a little bit of Hedwig's theme, as the sorting hat
right.
is magic.
Okay. Gryffindor!
Then when she's sorted into Gryffindor, we get more of the Hogwarts music.
Draco Malfoy.
With Malfoy and Slytherin, however, we get nothing but nasty underscore.
Slytherin!
Moving forward, with Ron Weasley, another new theme emerges. First nerves, underscored by a variation of Hedwig's theme, but then, when he's sorted into Gryffindor, we hear this old-school anthem or march.
Gryffindor!
Harry Potter?
Perhaps an in-world theme for Hogwarts? Well, let's hear Harry's sorting experience. More nerves. Ooh, lots of nerves. But he doesn't want Slytherin, even though it's offered to him. Now, when he's sorted into Gryffindor, listen for that Hogwarts theme again.
Slytherin will help you on the way to greatness, there's no doubt about that. No? Well, if you're sure, better be Gryffindor!
There it is. Let's hear it on the soundtrack album, where it's called Hogwarts Forever. It's like a school anthem or creed with a dotted rhythm, giving it an old school march, dum, bum, ba bum, bum, like many schools and universities have in real life. You know, when I first saw this movie, I called this theme for Gryffindor because it plays as the students are led to Gryffindor by the house prefect. But it's called Hogwarts Forever.
Gryffindors, follow me, please. Keep up. Thank you.
Ravenclaw, follow me.
This way.
This is the most direct path to the dormitories. Oh, and keep an eye on the staircases. They like to change. Keep up, please, and follow me. Quickly now, come on. Come on.
Listen to the theme get a little wonky harmonically after being told that the staircases move, and after seeing the paintings move.
Oh, look! Who's that girl?
Welcome to Hogwarts.
Who's that?
There is one more spot where we can clearly hear the Hogwarts Forever theme, which also seems to underscore the Gryffindor house in particular. And this moment has to do, again, with Harry's family. When Harry is made seeker of the Gryffindor Quidditch team, after sticking up for a bullied classmate, Neville Longbottom, by flying across the Hogwarts campus to fetch his Remembrall, after being made seeker, the first time in a century an 11-year-old is given this honor, by the way, Harry wonders aloud if he's going to make a fool of himself. Ah, Hermione counters this by saying that he won't because being a seeker is in his blood. It's then that she leads him to a hallway containing a trophy case, where Harry realizes that his father was a seeker decades before.
Oh, go on, Harry. Quidditch is great. Best game there is. And you'll be great too.
But I've never even played Quidditch. What if I make a fool of myself?
You won't make a fool of yourself. It's in your blood.
And what music do we hear? Hogwarts Forever.
Whoa. Harry, you never told me your father was a seeker, too.
I didn't know.
Only this time as a solo French horn. It's a nice choice, as it is a distant memory within school halls.
You, it's spooky. She knows more about you than you do.
Who doesn't?
Hogwarts Forever, this piece, it's an interesting choice by John Williams, as it kind of blurs the line a bit between music that probably exists in the character's world, i.e. this kind of school anthem, but our characters aren't necessarily hearing this music. It resonates with us, perhaps, as we recognize this type of academic march, typical in many of our schools. Anyway, now that the school year has begun, we of course move into football season, the preparation for fall sports, and of course, Halloween. And Halloween in the Philosopher's Stone doesn't disappoint.
It's Leviosa, not Leviosa. She's a nightmare, honestly. No wonder she hasn't got any friends.
I think she heard you.
The banquet hall is bewitched with floating jack-o'-lanterns, and there is a thunderstorm outside, and we hear once again Hedwig's theme. It's appropriate.
Where's Hermione?
Fatty Patel said that she wouldn't come out of the girls' bathroom. She said that she'd been in there all afternoon, crying.
But then, we hear that a troll has entered school grounds.
Troll! In the dungeon! Troll in the dungeon!
And the students are given a real Halloween scare.
Thought you ought to know.
But Harry and Ron leave the banquet hall and set out to go and let Hermione know that they're on lockdown, because she wouldn't know. Hermione, by the way, has been crying in the girls' bathroom ever since she overheard Ron talking about her behind her back to Harry, two that she thought were her friends. So Harry, in a Halloween act of bravery, breaks away with Ron from the prefects that are leading the children to the safety of their relative houses and leads Ron to search for Hermione so that she doesn't run into the troll. Again, she doesn't know. Of course, the troll then has gone into the girls' bathroom, and we hear, as this happens, we hear this great, great musical cue by John Williams as the three of them take down this troll. Listen to how the troll is characterized with this slow and low brass. He's not too bright. When he begins his attack, it's kind of like a low brass version of the B section of Hedwig's theme. And listen to the woodwinds and high strings as Hermione sneaks away to cover.
Help!
Listen to that perfect fifth in the brass as Harry responds to Hermione's cry for help and jumps on the troll. Luke's theme, anyone? And the big brassy monster music as the troll passes out on the floor. The action is, of course, heightened by the music. And true to form, John Williams heightens the action by following the sequence of events very, very closely. The music very, very closely follows the action with exciting, colorful, and wonderfully textured music.
And now for a brief intermission. We return now to the Soundtrack Show.
The big game, the Quidditch match, Gryffindor versus Slytherin, and a big trial for our main character, Harry Potter.
In fact, the music reflects the nerves and emotions behind this moment very clearly, as we're with the players of Gryffindor underneath the arena at first. Gladiators about to enter combat in the Colosseum, the music marches our characters towards this dangerous but exciting encounter, Quidditch. And then finally, a theme for the game of Quidditch emerges. Bright, colorful, exciting. The use of trumpets further accentuates that old Roman gladiatorial feel. It's funny, using brass is a classic Hollywood trope here. It's even older than Miklos Rose's score for Ben-Hur, and it blurs the lines once again between film score and source music. I mean, there aren't visibly brass players playing at Hogwarts, but the trope comes from the brass players that were visible on screen in a lot of historical Hollywood epic pictures. Now, we played quite a bit of the Quidditch music in the last episode, but I want to point out that most of this cue is a variation on the B section of Hedwig's theme, only constantly shifting as it closely follows the on-screen action.
Thank you.
And then, of course, when Harry is triumphant, we get Harry's wondrous world for the first time. As I mentioned at the top of the episode, I want to continue talking about Harry's wondrous world and Harry's theme, and I think now is the time to do so. What's so wonderful about the nature of this waltz-like piece is that it truly does harken back to another aspect of music of the Romantic era, which is that it has its roots in folk music, music that would be familiar to rural folk in their native countries. This was a big part of the Romantic era of orchestral music, as composers were using these folk melodies in their pieces. There are dozens of examples of this, from Dvorak to Chopin to Sibelius. But there's one piece in particular that I want to play, as it's one of my favorites, that reminds me not only of John Williams, but of Harry Potter's music in particular. I'm going to play a piece of music by Bedřich Smetana called The Moldau, which is a piece he wrote about the Moldau River in his home country, now in modern-day Czech Republic. This was one of a six-part nationalistic symphonic poem that he wrote called Ma Vlast, which means my homeland. Let's listen for two things when we listen to this piece. Listen to how he uses the orchestra to give us the motion, the color, and the texture of the flowing river, the Moldau River. And then also listen in this piece to the emergence of a glorious piece of Bohemian folk music. It'll be a waltz-like melody that will be very clear to you. The emergence of that folk tune. Now, let's listen again to Harry's wondrous world. John Williams is using this kind of Romantic era writing not just to do some very effective world building, although he is, but also to evoke a sense of warmth, of home in Hogwarts, a hard-earned sense of belonging that begins to stir inside Harry Potter, especially after the victories of Halloween and of the Quidditch match, a match he never would have played in had he not stood up against bully Draco Malfoy and fought for his new friends. Soon Christmas comes to Hogwarts. The snow falls and the kids all go away on their holiday breaks. Everyone, that is, except for Harry Potter and Ron Weasley. In the last episode, I mentioned that Harry Potter, as an orphan archetype, has a heightened sensory experience. His achievements are met with soaring happiness inside Harry. His need for belonging is very acute, and his loneliness can make him downright miserable. Well, in the true romantic era spirit of the 19th century, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone's Christmas setting is flat out Dickensian. Almost as if taken directly out of A Christmas Carol, Harry Potter is left alone at boarding school during the holidays, much in the same way as Ebenezer Scrooge was. Heck, even the friendly ghosts that casually haunt the hallways of Hogwarts can be seen in full Dickens attire, singing a Christmas carol that John Williams penned for this magical wizarding world. While it's only heard briefly in the film as they pass by Hermione before she goes into the banquet hall to say goodbye, the soundtrack treats us to the full tune.
Merry Christmas, ring the Hogwarts bell. Merry Christmas, cast a Christmas spell. Have a wondrous wizard Christmas, have a merry Christmas day. Hover round the sparkling fire, have a merry Christmas day. Find a broomstick in your stocking, see the magic on display.
Join the owls joyous flocking on this merry Christmas day.
Ding dong, ding dong, ring the Hogwarts bell.
Ring the Hogwarts bell.
Ding dong, ding dong, cast a Christmas spell. Ding dong, ding dong, make the Christmas morning bright. Fly high across the sky, light the Christmas night. Merry Christmas.
Here it is briefly in the movie, but then revisited with bells.
Merry Christmas, ring the Hogwarts bell.
Come on.
Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, cast a Christmas bell.
Now that's a spooky Christmas. I just love this little detail in the score. Anyway, back to Charles Dickens. Ebenezer Scrooge wasn't an orphan, per se, but he was left behind by an uninterested father at his boarding school. And like Scrooge, Harry Potter suffers loneliness and a longing for family. If it wasn't for Ron Weasley and a homework assignment from Hermione to go look in the restricted section of the Hogwarts library to help us move the plot forward, I imagine that this holiday break would be absolutely unbearable for 11-year-old Harry. Without a family to go home to, and without his classmates or even most professors to be with, Harry Potter's break from the school year must leave him feeling empty. The score that John Williams uses to evoke this emptiness is simple and perfect. A sustained synth sound of windy, hollow tones perfectly conveys the desolate, empty halls of Hogwarts and the feeling of creeping through the school late at night. It's wonderful and gives a dark, eerie element to this Christmas break. But the break isn't just desolation and emptiness. In many ways, it's filled with warmth and certainly an incredible amount of self-discovery for Harry. Let's start with Christmas morning, spent in Gryffindor House, with just Ron and Harry together.
Harry, wake up! Come on, Harry, wake up!
Happy Christmas, Harry.
Happy Christmas, Ron. What are you wearing?
Oh, Mum made it. Looks like you got one too.
I've got presents.
Yeah. There they are.
Listen to the excitement in the music, the joy. Oh, it's a nice, uplifting section. A bright spot in this holiday break. But later, something else happens that is extremely significant for Harry. After using the invisibility cloak, and then trying to avoid detection, he stumbles upon a room that contains a mirror, the mirror of Erised, which shows Harry his heart's desire, a vision of his parents who have long since passed away.
Mom? Dad?
And when the mirror does show this to Harry, we hear the theme I mentioned before, Harry's theme, or perhaps the Potter family theme. A glassy, cold rendition of this cue, as his parents aren't really there. Harry's warned away from the mirror by Dumbledore, who discovers Harry sitting in front of it after presumably hours. Here is J.K. Rowling's own quote from the Pottermore website about the Mirror of Erised. Quote, Albus Dumbledore's words of caution to Harry when discussing the Mirror of Erised express my own views. The advice to hold on to your dreams is all well and good, but there comes a point when holding on to your dreams becomes unhelpful and even unhealthy. Dumbledore knows that life can pass you by while you're clinging on to a wish that can never be, or ought never to be, fulfilled. Harry's deepest yearning is for something impossible, the return of his parents. Desperately sad, though it is, that he has been deprived of his family, Dumbledore knows that to sit gazing on a vision of what he can never have will only damage Harry. The mirror is bewitching and tantalizing, but it does not necessarily bring happiness. End quote.
I see that you, like so many before you, have discovered the delights of the Mirror of Erised. I trust by now you realize what it does.
Men have wasted away in front of it, even gone mad. That is why tomorrow it will be moved to a new home. And I must ask you not to go looking for it again. It does not do to dwell on dreams, Harry, and forget to live.
So Harry breaks from the mirror, and the film moves us into a musical montage of, guess what? Harry's Wondrous World. In a very simple, gorgeous scene, the movie takes a moment to breathe with only Harry and Hedwig. Harry wanders the school courtyard with Hedwig in the snow, learning to appreciate the beauty of his life as this joyous and healing music plays. Unlike Scrooge, the Hogwarts Christmas break hasn't hardened Harry's heart. It's warmed it through a journey of self-discovery. Harry's Wondrous World, a modified lullaby that is related to the Potter theme, is music that embraces the new world around him. So the idea that Harry is now finding his place in the world at Hogwarts goes beyond the book, beyond the script page, or the moving image. This idea is also presented to us musically with incredible skill by the composer.
The Soundtrack Show will continue in a moment. We return now to the Soundtrack Show.
Final exams. They're stressful enough, but imagine having to worry about an upcoming fight with the most evil person in the world with the fate of the school in the balance while doing it. Well, luckily for us, Harry, Ron, and Hermione breeze through their exams, defeat Voldemort and Professor Quirrell, and somehow still manage to be okay. What I want to talk about is the aftermath of all of those events, and how the end of this movie is treated musically. At the end of the film, Harry wakes up from being knocked unconscious, and has a conversation with Dumbledore about how he defeated Quirrell and Voldemort. The answer? The love of his parents left a mark on Harry, more powerful than the scar that Voldemort gave him. As Harry hears this, which he never would have known had he not come to Hogwarts and been brave enough to face Voldemort, we hear Harry's theme.
Harry, do you know why
Professor Quirrell couldn't bear to have you touch him. It was because of your mother. She sacrificed herself for you. And that kind of act leaves a mark. No, no. This kind of mark cannot be seen. It lives in your very skin.
What is it?
Love, Harry. Love.
Afterwards, Harry reunites with his friends Hermione and Ron, who are, by themselves, by the way, getting to know each other. I wonder where that's going to go. And we hear Harry's Wondrous World.
All right there, Ron.
All right.
You? All right. Hermione?
Never better.
Then, we're once again placed in the main banquet hall at Hogwarts, with the green Slytherin banners flying overhead. We slowly learn that Slytherin has won the House Cup, which is a coveted cup that is awarded every year to the house with the most points. However, at the last minute, Dumbledore awards Gryffindor points for their heroic deeds. Now, let's listen to how John Williams treats this scene and all of the rest of the movie all the way to the end.
Yes, yes, well done, Slytherin, well done, Slytherin. However, recent events must be taken into account. And I have a few last-minute points to award.
First, the Celeste.
To Miss Hermione Granger, for the cool use of intellect.
Which way is this thing going to go?
Well, others were in grave peril. 50 points.
The magic is becoming warmer with the entrance of strings and winds.
Second, to Mr. Ronald Weasley for the best played game of chess that Hogwarts has seen these many years. 50 points. And third, to Mr. Harry Potter for pure nerve and outstanding courage, I award Gryffindor House 60 points.
The music of Harry's Wondrous World is starting to come together, but not yet.
We're tied with Slytherin.
And finally,
first Neville.
It takes a great deal of bravery to stand up to your enemies, but a great deal more to stand up to your friends.
And then,
I award 10 points to Neville Longbottom. Assuming that my calculations are correct, I believe that a change of decoration is in order.
Gryffindor wins the House Cup, and Harry's Wondrous World soars.
Gryffindor wins the House Cup.
Taking a slow, warm victory lap. Again, modulating upwards into a new key. Pure fun here with the woodwinds. And now we arrive at the train station. Everyone's leaving for the summer. The school year is over.
Train's leaving. Go on, go on. Come on, hurry up.
Now listen to this. Harry goes back over to Hagrid to give him a hug.
Come on, Harry. 1 minute.
And Hagrid gives him a scrapbook that features a picture of Harry as a baby with his parents.
Thought you were leaving without saying goodbye, did you?
And we hear Harry's theme.
This is for you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Hagrid.
Go on, I'm with you. I'm with you now. I'm with you. Oh, and listen, Harry. If that dolt of a cousin of yours, Dudley, gives you any grief, you could always, threaten him with a nice pair of ears to go with that tail of his.
But, Hagrid, we're not allowed to do magic away from Hogwarts. You know that.
I do. But your cousin don't, do he? Hey?
A bit of magic music, as magic is referenced right here. Now listen to this dialogue.
Feels strange to be going home, doesn't it?
I'm not going home. Not really.
Harry says he's not going home. Not really. Hogwarts is his new home, as Harry Potter's theme soars. And to drive the point home, the camera pans upwards and we see Hogwarts standing proudly in the distance. Hogwarts is Harry's new home. His true sense of belonging comes from his wondrous world of magic. Thank you.